July 30th, 2026. I'm your host, Alex Jones. Riding shotgun is my veteran son, 13 years in the InfoWar, Rex Jones. The incredible Michael Yon, geopolitical expert, military expert, joins us. Then Joe Kent, former head of National Counterterrorism Center. On the incredible developments, we have Israel and a huge walkout at a military base over Satan worship that reportedly the leadership was engaged in. They even have proof. Those video clips and the walkout are coming up next segment. And more. But Rex, you've been sitting there very patiently while myself and Kirk Elliott talked about the situation. Trump's got to get an off-ramp soon. The problem is Iran knows that if they make a deal, we won't stick by it. So they're going all the way here in a war of attrition. And we are now having a strategic defeat, meaning a Pyrrhic victory. Rex, we called it by the book, 100% dead on. And I just can't believe that the neocons were able to convince Trump to do this.
Right. I mean, our network is known for futurist predictions. And I called it. You called it at 2 a.m. in the morning when this was all happening. This is a war of choice. And this is why we're fated to lose. This is why the Iranians are fated to win. Right. Because winning to them looks a lot different than it does to us. For us to win, we would have to take over the country, do the regime change, break it up into three pieces, install the Shah or whatever Israeli leadership needed to go down there for them to be happy. That is essentially like trying to get to the moon on like a $1,000 budget. You know, we're going to build a space program, make it work. There's just not enough logistics and troops in the world for us to get that done. Whereas all the Iranians have to do is keep the strait closed. And not even just that now with the Houthis, the Yemeni people joining in, closing the Bab el-Mandeb with the Iraqi resistance joining in, that axis of resistance is really starting to take shape and form because they realize their threshold for pain is a lot more extreme than ours is. And that's kind of the nature of all of this. And to people on, I'll just say like our side, whatever you want to say, populist right, people that are still having an issue where they're unable to break with Trump, they're unable to stop believing what he's saying. We've literally watched him say the same thing 100 times. They have no air defense. They have no military. It's obliterated. We've defeated them. Okay, so why are the troops
no
massive?
Missiles? They have no missiles.
Exactly. Oh, well, why do we lose 43 aircraft? And then they'll just kind of gloss that over. They don't really care. People still don't consider this to be a war, Dad. I think that's the most outrageous thing.
Almost all of the billion-dollar radar, which they have to have for missile defense, old-fashioned radar spins, folks. They have total beam radar that costs over $1 billion per unit. We had two of them over there. They're all blown up. They had a bunch of other subgroups that are almost
I believe they've blown up over 10. I believe the average cost is between $300 to $600 million. All right. This is what makes the Patriot and the THAAD at least somewhat semi-effective if they are operational. However, our munitions that cost between $4 million if it's the Patriot and $12 million if it's the THAAD are complete doo-doo rockets if they do not have the radars to make them function. And that's the reality. And that's just a
Let's
fact.
Let's be clear. There's only six of this radar that cost over $1 billion. They blew those up.
Sure. I'm talking about over 10 multiple classes.
Other advanced radar. Yeah,
absolutely.
But overall, more than 40 of our radars have been blown up. We're basically blind. That's why the ships won't go into the strait. Trump keeps trying to order them in the Situation Room. We first broke this. It's now confirmed to go into the strait. They explain they can because they've got the Chinese anti-ship missiles that will defeat. Are a different system. So yeah, this is a disaster. And you know, Lindsey Graham said, "I believe in our Marines." I think 2,000.
If we could do
Marines
Iwo Jima, we could do this, which is just a sick statement to make. It's really disgusting to throw away American sons and daughters like that. The lives they don't care. It's like scraps on the plate.
But you hit the key there. We would need hundreds of thousands of troops just to take straight. Israel said this is ideal. They want the quagmire. They lied to Trump. But instead, because they lie to him and tell him he's great, he loves them and he hates the people that were right. Good. We don't care because we're loyal Americans. Rex, stay right there, my friend. You're on fire. And we will continue on back in 60 seconds with Michael Yon joining us. We're going to get into the folks walking off the military base, the devil worship.
New grape flavor, bovine colostrum gummies. Yeah, baby. Yeah, these are the best. Support your gut with these great gummies. Get yours now.
The all-new Groovy Grape Bovine Colostrum Gummies have arrived. They're sweet, they're groovy, and they're ready to roll. Don't miss out. Get yours today. Oh, yeah, baby. globalists are poisoning your family. Fight back with superfood gummies, vitamins, powerhouse probiotics, plus an organic fruit and veggie blast. For the resistance, get them now. Now that's how you stick it to the globalists. Tastes like pure victory, baby. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
From the front lines of the information war, it's Alex Jones.
Okay, first they reported dozens. Now it's 100. Now it's hundreds of Israeli soldiers from a military base in Israel, S-D-E-T-E-I-M-A-N, I think that's Sid Teeman, have walked off the base over the commanders putting up signs depicting Israel as Satan defeating its neighbors and reportedly doing satanic rituals. The IDF says the troops deserted the base, leaving behind their weapons without the approval of their superiors after the battalion commander decided to take down and destroy signs that had been put up by the soldiers. They are saying that basically the commanders were involved in satanic activities. The decorative signs had contained materials that supposedly humiliated soldiers in the unit, according to the Army. Soldiers claim the signs were part of our company tradition. The incident is being investigated and handled by the commanders. This is an incident that is inconsistent with the values of the IDF, with what is expected of our soldiers. The military said infantry soldiers in the IDF have a history of mass desertion over alleged unfair treatment in the military. So just more bizarre behavior. We're going to be getting into all this with Michael Yon and more. But first, let's play some a newscast about it, then raw footage of over 100 of them deserting, marching off the base. Here it is.
We're showing shots of the protests and some of these signs. And reading deeper in the articles, they said that the leadership was engaged in satanic rituals. A lot of bizarreness over there. Again, you had Canaanite cults, you had Moloch, you had Baal, all that stuff all continues on. It's in the later books. After the original Bible was written, the Old Testament, there's dozens of other books, but 30 plus they think are basically inspired by God. And a bunch of those get into black magic. When you get into the Jewish mysticism in the Kabbalah, when you get to the final level, you embrace the devil and merge with the devil and then become a greater creature because you have embraced the darkness. I mean, you cannot make this stuff up, but again, that all came out of the Egyptian black magic. It's similar to the European black magic that basically came out of Solomon itself. The Star of David is not the Star of David, and it's not the Star of Rin family. Everybody says that's another star. It is the seal of Solomon, and the anti-Israel people always go, "You're a liar, it's Rin fam." No, it's worse. The seal of Solomon is the seal, and then this is in the Book of Solomon. It's one of the official Jewish holy books. You can read it online. It's free, okay, written thousands of years ago. And it explains how he had hundreds and hundreds of wives. He adopted all their religions. He was the wisest man alive. They weren't sure if he was accepted by God at the end, like King David, who was a man after God's own heart. And he was given the seal when he was involved in black magic, basically by the devil as a way to control demons. And so the two triangles, one down, one up, that symbol is the seal of Solomon or Solomon's key. Okay, so that is the symbol that is a top signet in black magic and in the occult. There are several other symbols that are seen as almost as powerful. One is the V. That's why Aleister Crowley, officially for OSS,
did rituals and created the V to counter the swastika. The sun symbol, or the swastika turning clockwise, is also seen in the occult as a symbol almost as powerful, or as powerful, maybe more powerful than the Seal of Solomon. And anybody that actually studies mainline, you know, but I mean serious black magic, and I have read the official black magic books, the Grand Grimoires, all of it, you'd understand that is the Seal of Solomon. And then you have the V that Crowley basically resurrected and that he said was super powerful to counter the swastika. So this is all magic. This is all occultism. This is very serious. This is what goes on in Hollywood and everywhere else. This is what goes on with Jeffrey Epstein. This is what goes on with the British elites. And whether it's Chinese black magic, which you can go to any, you know, mall in China and they'll do curses for you and the rest of it. You can go pay for curses in Japan. You can pay for curses in Africa. You can walk in any you know, bazaar or mall in Kenya or in Nigeria. You can walk into, you know, any place you want in the world other than Muslim countries. They're one of their credits, though they kind of hide it in the back room. You can walk right in and they'll do rituals and all this stuff and tell you they're cursing people and all the rest of it. You can go to Haiti and do it. Every culture does this. I'm not just singling out the Jews. I'm a fair person, but let's just say they're particularly into it, a lot of them, and that is just the reality. So there we are. We're going to bring Michael Yawn in, who is a world traveler, actually lives in Japan and in Dripping Springs, Texas, part of the year, and he is a former Green Beret A-team operator, and he, of course, is leading combat journalist and photographer. Some of the most incredible photos ever embedded for decades. Saw a lot more combat being embedded with our military around the world than he ever saw when he was a Green Beret in Europe. And then, of course, he's a geopolitical expert and predicted everything that's now unfolding and happening. I want to not so much get into the strategic areas. We've kind of broken that down, but Trump being exacerbated, wanting an exit ramp. Iran saying, we don't trust you to make a deal. We're going to keep the strait closed. We're going to win by attrition. They're now telling, the Pentagon is telling Trump, as they did before the war started, that you're having a strategic defeat. You may be having tactical victories, but those are battles. You're not winning the war. So he's learning what the British learned fighting George Washington. Not comparing the Iranians to George Washington in their beliefs, but in their tactical activities of perseverance. This is a basic understanding of war. You don't just have siege of a city. You have a guerrilla force that is able to hold on and sap the resources of a larger foe. And in the end, you always win. As the Romans said, our enemies are not defeated until they recognize themselves as such. We were never defeated because we will never recognize ourselves as defeated. There's another way of saying it. Resistance is victory. So let's talk big picture. No off ramps here. Where this is going with the great Michael Yawn. Michael, thank you for being here with us today.
Hey, Alex. Well, the last time I saw you, I was in your studio, so now I'm over here. So, man, what an epic way to start the day with Israeli forces going AWOL. I didn't expect that. And from devil worshipers of all things. Well, you know, no off-ramps is right, because that's not what this is meant to be. This is the, you know, the big target with this, as you well know, is the United States. United States is being expended in this war. And you saw, by the way, I think you talked about it earlier about the Saudis bombed Iraq.
Yes. Please elaborate with your geopolitical expertise. Go wherever you want. Give us an assessment, please, sir.
Oh, good. I spent a couple of years running around Iraq, so I'm pretty familiar with those areas. And you see the pilgrims to Karbala being bombed allegedly by Saudi Arabia, which of course would widen this with the Shia majority around those areas. A huge amount of people are Shia, right? And so the Wahhabists who would have. This is quite fascinating. You know, I've published numerous times that I would expect at some point, or let's say a high probability, that Mecca and Medina would be let's say attacked. And and Mecca and Medina, of course, are in Saudi Arabia. There's huge, obviously, pilgrimages to those every year, the Hajj and that sort of thing. But you know what you mentioned earlier, Alex, about, you know, basically getting everybody into a big fight. That's part of the plan. I think all these countries in the Middle East, or let's say not in the Middle East, but in the Gulf states, not including Iran, but the Kuwait, Bahrain, Qatar, Oman, and Saudi Arabia, actually, UAE. I think that those will likely not exist when this is over. Likely. I think that because I think that it, that appears to be part of the plan. Of course, with the greater Israel, that would include taking out Jordan. That would include taking out Lebanon, which is being done right now. Gaza, of course, much of Syria, most of Syria, a big, huge part of Iraq, Saudi Arabia, and UAE, Qatar, and Bahrain. Now, back to Iraq, I would not be surprised. I think I mentioned this to you, to see Mosul Dam at some point be destroyed. Mosul Dam, you know, if Israel wants to take, basically Israel's going supernova at this point. They're clearly collapsing. The country's not doing well. It's sick. The Israelis are spreading around the world. They're going to Argentina and Guatemala and Panama and Thailand and Philippines, the United States, of course. They're going to Greece. They're going all over the world. They're abandoning ship. And now we just saw, I just learned about this when I was just watching you talk about how these Israeli soldiers just abandoned their post, actually, which is pretty interesting in a time of war. But I think what we're going to see is countries such as, the Iranians apparently have been attacking the desalinization plants in Kuwait, which actually in the desalinization plants in Kuwait, when you attack those, you're also attacking their electrical grid because they're co-sanguinated. By the way,
Michael, you're skipping around, giving them all the facts, which is incredible. You predicted all this months ago and weeks ago that it would pop off in Iraq next. Now that's happened. And that's why the Saudis are getting involved. Israel's ministers have said we can blow up the Al-Aqsa Mosque and blame it on an Iranian missile to trigger a Shiite-Sunni civil war. They could also hit Mecca or Medina and trigger that. Israel's also said they want a new 9/11. They didn't say they'll stage it, very thinly veiled. They've also said that Iran wants to kill Trump. They could easily kill Trump and then use that to nuke Iran. I'm really concerned they're going to assassinate Trump, a deep state coalition with Israel, to launch a full war or do a false flag nuke in New York or off Tel Aviv. Say on a barge or something, they've already pre-programmed that, to go to full nuclear war, cause a civil war in the region. Once it all collapses, then Israel can move in, put in new governments. Their finance minister said last week, this is the ideal situation, having chaos in the U.S. in the middle of it. They don't even hide this. So give us a 35,000-foot view first. It's like a Green Beret. You're walking through all the pieces and where this spiraling is going. And is there any off-ramp? Because Trump more and more, not to his credit, I'm just saying, is signaling he wants an off-ramp from my sources inside the White House. And now that's confirmed in the news. But Iran, again, knows they hold the cards, so they're not going to back down. So when the immovable object comes into the unstoppable force, you get an explosion. Michael Young, give us your 35,000-foot view.
Right. I don't see any off-ramp. I don't see that happening at all. I mean, obviously, everything is possible, but I'm not seeing the actual route to an off-ramp. This is not meant to have an off-ramp. Actually, when did Israel mention about attacking Mecca and Medina? I didn't see that, but I've been suspecting that may happen.
No. They've had Israeli ministers say we could blow up a bunch of them on TV. They said we ought to drop a missile on Al-Aqsa, you know, where the Second Temple's under it, the rubble when Titus sacked it. And they said we could blow that up and trigger a Shiite-Sunni civil war. So I'm just saying, extrapolating out to Mecca and Medina and Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, so that's okay. This is you saw the alleged attack from Saudi Arabia and the United States on the pilgrims related to Karbala today, right? Now there's the opening. There's your entree right there to go ahead and attack Mecca and Medina and blame it on Iran, right? Which is what I've been expecting.
Explain what that means. People that don't know, you get some Shiites killed. Now that sets the false flag up to claim Iran hits the holy sites in Saudi Arabia.
Right, exactly. So basically it's a, you know, sort of Catholics versus
Protestants. Remember, not everybody's a famous geopolitical Green Beret, 30 years, 40 years, you know, running around the planet with armies. So just, you have to explain this to people. We have a smart audience, but you need to really explain it.
Right. So basically, putting it in Christian terms, it's basically like Catholics versus Protestants, you know. So you're hitting you would basically hit the Vatican and hit wherever the, well, the Protestants are all over the place, but you know, you're basically attacking their holiest spots to get those to fight each other, you know, like has happened before with Catholics. You go up to Belfast, and they still got a wall between Catholics and Protestants. But it's similar with Muslims, with Sunni and Shia, right? Basically, it's a direct equivalent, actually. And so there's been a serious effort to get those guys fighting each other, Sunni versus Shia. But this is part of a larger destruction program, right? And keeping those guys, you know, there's not a single train in the Middle East, by the way, that crosses borders. I mean, and that was part of an old game to keep these people all separated. But what I think is happening, Alex, is the depopulation that you've talked about many times, global depopulation is unfolding. And in service to that, getting rid of that energy over there, getting rid of the fertilizer capacity and those trade routes, is very helpful in causing global famine, right? I think brought more broadly from that area of the world, Middle East, but shooting over to Strait of Malacca, I think that's going to get closed. I think the Turkish Strait's going to get closed. The Bosphorus, Dardanelles, I think you're going to see those closed, right? At some point in Danish Strait, I think you're going to see that closed. I think you're going to end up seeing attacks on Hamburg at some point. This is big, Alex. You know this. You talked about this stuff for years, and here it comes. And so I think what we're seeing here, that attack apparently on pilgrims in Iraq today, is part of that, you know, just rattling the box, getting the Sunni and the Shia to really fight each other madly, which that could spread to other countries, by the way. That could spread to, of course, you know, like in Pakistan and India. I mean, this could spread all over the place. This won't be confined. If you get the Sunni versus Shia fighting on a large scale, these things could unfold in the United States, of course.
And let me add two data points to that. Exactly. Let me add two data points of your expertise on that. I want to bring Rex in with his questions. You had Trump 2 weeks ago saying he may send in al-Qaeda that we put in charge of Syria when Trump was not even president-elect. It was done by Biden, NATO, with Turkey and Israel. They put the head of al-Qaeda in there. They've exterminated more Christians and more Alawite Muslims than others. He said we may send in al-Qaeda into Lebanon. Israel says they're going to take all of Lebanon. They're going to take large parts of Syria, greater Israel. They've uncloaked. They admit that, mask off to stir people up. How does that tie in now that we see them activating, as you said, the al-Qaeda armies for this? And how do the Muslims not see through this when it's so transparent? I remember, you know, we exposed on 9/11 how the West was running Israel and the U.S., al-Qaeda. Now it's all declassified and admitted. It's crazy how Lindsey Graham, it turned out through USA and the State Department, was their main funder along with John McCain while he claimed he was fighting him. I mean, so this is just nakedly out in the open. They're gearing up. It's already started a massive Muslim civil war that will then lay the way for a greater Israel. This is so cold-blooded and just absolutely disgusting.
Right. I mean, they're trying to foment a civil war between the Muslims in service to the Greater Israel Project, which, and also in service to global famines. Now, I think they're going to just genocide Lebanon just the way, I mean, the Zionists are going to genocide Lebanon just the way that they've genocided Gaza. And again, that's part of the Greater Israel Project. They're going to end up in a fight with obviously going for Egypt and Turkey as well, which is, you know, at some point they may have bitten off. There you go. There's the patch right there, the Greater Israel. It doesn't include the whole map, by the way. If you look down there, the new Somalia and that sort of thing, you know, near the Bab al-Mandeb, you can see that that will be another part of this. They're highest, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society is moving people out of Somalia into the United States and Europe. But that, you know, you can see Egypt there as part of the Greater Israel Project. This is why I wonder what their plans, they must have put a lot of consideration into Aswan Dam. Will they destroy Aswan Dam or try to collect it up? I don't know. What will the Zionists do with Aswan Dam? What will they do with Mosul Dam? I think they're going to destroy Mosul Dam, but you know, we'll wait and see. But they could destroy Mosul Dam and then blame it on the Iranians. That would be child's play to do that as well, especially once you get a civil war going. Now, keep in mind, if you blow up Mosul Dam, there you go. There's Netanyahu holding up the map. But if they blow up Mosul Dam, that will do significant damage to the population of Iraq. And I just think they'll go for it. And also, you know, keep in mind, World War One, the biggest part of World War One, you know, the huge spark that got that going was not Prince Ferdinand or Archduke Ferdinand.
It was the Ottoman Empire.
That's right. It was that railway right through Mosul, right? It was that railway that goes right through the Berlin to Baghdad railway that would eventually go to Basra, right? And then there's oil terminals down Eibat and Kayat. I've been on those oil terminals. Those are right off.
Let me raise this for people. Remember, you're very sophisticated. I'm not kissing your ass. It's true. And we have smart listeners. A lot of them are following you. Some aren't, because I can barely follow you, and I'm pretty well informed. So just you got to get down our level here. Wars never really end. They just pause, as you know. And historically, especially in the modern age. And so all the same things like herpes is coming back to the surface. There's a big flare-up here. And all the same preparations are being made for an even bigger explosion. And so that's where we are, is at this jumping off point. And I know you're just done with Trump. You don't even care. Like, he doesn't matter. Like, he's a puppet, which I get. But we can put pressure on his administration. I don't think Trump has any idea that he's been set up to take the fall for this giant war that's already started in the history books. And the people he thought were his buddies are his absolute sworn enemies, as Tucker warned him many times. I mean, it's just, my hope is that Trump could wake the hell up, that he's been set up, and doesn't keep like a degenerate gambler doubling down, that somehow he can put the brakes on Israel, cut the money off, the weapons off, make a deal with Iran, and pull out of this now. Because the Iranians have to know, yeah, they're winning a strategic, you know, battle now, but if they force us into total war, Israel intends to win this in the end and intends to make it so bad we've got to send in troops and nukes. It's an insane gamble, but I think the Iranians need to come to their senses and not gamble and make some type of deal with Trump. You think there's any way of that happening?
No, I don't see an off ramp, Alex, because I don't see, that's not the energy in the system that we're seeing. This is, again, as you just mentioned, this is it's like a herpes outbreak. You know, I've been calling it an inflection point, but I may start calling it a herpes outbreak, because this is a long war, and there are outbreaks like the Great War. World War One was an outbreak, actually. This is the same war as World War One, by the way. This is the same war as World War Two. These are all the same war. It's just they have different names and that sort of thing. But this is the exact same war. And it's never ended. And it's not, there's no end in sight that I see, as long as there's humans in that area. And it doesn't matter, by the way, as we mentioned before, it doesn't matter if you take all the people out of there that are there now and replace them with somebody else. The people that are there will end up fighting, because the routes and resources there are, they're going to fight for those routes and resources.
Hi, Leon, stay there. You're totally on target. People are learning about real warfare, real geopolitics, just like World War II never ended between Ukraine and Russia. It's the same story. And who was it? Nazis versus... I'll tell you something right now that is one of the most, if not the most important things I've ever talked about on air. And I want you to really listen to me. And I want you to get a pen and paper out of your iPhone, out of your Droid, and type this into your notes. And I want you at lunch today or tonight or right now to just go to any search engine you want and type in two different names, two different words, okay? Two different drugs that have won Nobel Prizes, you name it, that people don't want you to know about. And one of those is ivermectin, that everybody knows about. The other one that most people still don't know about is mebendazole. If you do the research, then it's important to understand that you need to get it from a pharmacy. You need to get it from a doctor. And we have a sponsor, and that's, of course, Bigly. And they went and they used the same service as, you know, the big web, RXs, and great people we've used that have been sponsors in the past. But this is Bigly doing it. And the key is, it's real, it's pharmaceutical, and it is a very low price. People are selling knockoffs of it online without a prescription, and a lot of it's fake, or a lot of it's watered down and adulterated. Because I did a regimen a couple years ago of mebendazole. We'll put that on screen. That's how you spell it right there. mebendazole. And it didn't have any effect. I bought it off of Amazon. And then I did more research, and they said most of that stuff's fake. So I went and I got it from a doctor, and it was incredible. And my own medical doctor owns clinics all over the state of Texas had already been pushing it on me for years, and I just never done it. Ladies and gentlemen, you can get the two in a combo, the ivermectin and the mebezidol, together, and they work synergistically together. It is certified and known, both of them, as incredible anti-parasite. Just search the term ivermectin, mebezidol, and just put in study and do your own research and see what the system has been suppressing about this. And this is something, in my view, talk to your physician. And when you go to the website, it's, you know, an online pharmacy, and they've got nurses, doctors, all of it. And then you get the prescription. It's very, very easy to do. And I would recommend to talk to your doctors. My own personal opinion. What I do for myself is twice a year, I take a regimen of ivermectin and mebezidol. And it is incredible. People ask why I look so young while I'm healthy. Well, it's a cocktail of things. It's the ivermectin. It's the mebezidol that I take about twice a year as a regimen. Some people, my medical doctor says, take a little bit of ivermectin every week, but I tend to forget to do that. She's literally just says take like two pills a week as a supplemental. That's what my medical doctor tells me. You get your own medical doctor to tell you what you want. But the big thing they say is a couple of times a year, a big dose, a big regimen. You talk to your physicians. You talk to the folks in the online pharmacy. Let me put it on screen for you. 1776RX, just 1776RX.health. This is one of the most important things you'll ever do, ladies and gentlemen. And despite the system trying to suppress this information, it's getting out everywhere. So do your own research. This is revolutionary. This is so important. 1776, just the numbers. 1776RX.health. Those are the coordinates. And it's a win-win to fund our operation and what we're doing. Take action now. The most important decision you'll ever make, 1776RX.health, and get your ivermectin, mebezidol right now, ladies and gentlemen. But whatever you do, go to the alexjonesstore.com. These are incredible products. All these things work. They don't have sexy names. Irish sea moss, Shilajit, bovine colostrum. Oh, research bovine colostrum and then find out we have the best. Oh, research Irish sea moss. We have the best. Research Shilajit. We have the best. We just bring you things the bad guys don't want you to know about at TheAlexShowStore.com and, of course, at 1776RX.health. Take action now. Thank you so much for your support.
Waging war on corruption. It's Alex Jones.
Now, I do something occasionally that irritates listeners, you know, and it irritates me too. But you notice when I have a guest on who's covering stuff, I know the general public understands. I have a really good grasp of that. I don't interrupt them. Sometimes I'll go 10 minutes and the guest will say, are you there? And I'm like, yeah, I'm listening. Michael Yon has such an incredible grasp of geopolitics, history, how it's all interconnected, real war theory. And I've read hundreds of books on this myself. You know, it's way more than I do. That I know, am I being insulting? Some of it was going over my head. I know, slow down. And then he started elaborating. World War I was just a continuation of the old empire's war. World War II was that. This is mainline history. We get to PhD level. Just like Ukraine was the Catholics split in the West and the East, the Orthodox, and that was where a lot of the main battles happened and the main gateway for Barbarossa in 42 into Russia. That's why it's so important to Russia. So it's continuation. That's why the Azov Battalion are the grandkids of the Nazis. It's why the, you know, all these ministers and people are the grandkids of Nazis. They are Nazis when the Russians say that. And then you have the standing ovation a few years ago of the SS officer that on record actually did massacre people thousands at a time, throwing them in graves, Poles and Ukrainians. And they said he fought the Russians in World War II, and they all get up and clap. Now, they couldn't all be that ignorant in the Canadian Parliament that the Russians were on our side in World War II. No, they are saying we are for the Nazis. We are for that. And now you have Laura Loomer, not even attacking her. It just shows, I think, her own ignorance or whatever's going on. She meets with the founder and the head of the Azov Battalion. We'll put the shot on screen and says, he's not a Nazi. Look, I'm Jewish. He didn't hurt me. Well, his leader is Jewish, Zelensky. Zelensky, 4 years ago, got us, hey, you got a lot of Nazis in the Azov Battalion. He said, they're Ukrainians too. So it's not debatable. It's not like he's a dragon going to eat you because you're Jewish. The point is, he is the Nazi contingent. They do blood and soil, Heil Hitler stuff. They do all the rituals, all the torch-lit things at night. They admit that. They have the same insignia of the Ukrainian Nazis in World War II. That is not debated. That is a fact. And so, and I'm only showing this to show the continuation of history and how Laura Loomer is so over the top with her gaslighting, or maybe she's just this ignorant, that she's over there saying, look, he's not a Nazi, he's nice. I'm Jewish, he's being friendly to me. This is next level insanity. Here's a clip of the SS officer, almost 100 years old, getting a standing ovation. Then the Russians wanted him extradited as a Nazi war criminal. They said no. Undebated Nazi. Simon Wiesenthal didn't hunt down real Nazis. Klaus Barbie, the Angel of Death, Dr. Mengele, they were all allowed to live in South America. We got thousands and thousands, 36,000 Nazis over here to run all of our programs. Then in World War II, Operation Paperclip. And I'm not saying it's a Nazi conspiracy. I'm saying they were brought into the globalist system because of their understanding of the Russian networks and fighting that. And then she's over there, not, I think she's just ignorant, literally saying this guy's not a Nazi when our own State Department says they are Nazis and that that's a part of their main army. Here's the clip, just for historical context, of the SS officer being given a standing ovation.
Zelensky's speech received at least a dozen standing ovations. There was also one for this man, a 98-year-old Ukrainian-Canadian who fought for Ukrainian independence against the Russians during the Second World War.
The origin of this invite is one of the many unanswered mysteries pertaining to Nazigate. Apparently, it was the Hunka family that reached out to Mr. Rota, suggesting that it would make for a whiz-bang photo op to have Hunka Sr. lauded in the House of Commons when Zelensky dropped by for a fundraiser, a visit. Did the Hunka family not consider that in this day and age of the internet, people might do a little investigating on the Googler machine and dredge up some really embarrassing details? Not that the mainstream media could be bothered to do so last week, mind you. It was my beloved big boss man, Ezra Levant, that got the Nazigate ball rolling last weekend by simply doing some basic mathematics. Which is to say, if someone is fighting against the Russians prior to May 8th, 1945, that means you were on the wrong side of history.
Now, what's important is he was an SS officer who did take part in documented mass machine gunnings and throwing people into mass graves. Where Zelensky's gone and put plaques up for the dead. This is unbelievable. A true dyed-in-the-wool, thoroughbred Nazi, standing ovation because he fought the Russians in World War II. That's how stupid they think we are. Now, getting back to Michael Yon, I'm going to turn the baton over to him and Rex to get into all of this. When Joe Kent comes on, Rex, please ask him about off-ramps. He's been trying to get off-ramps. I know Jan's saying there's too much kinetic energy like a hurricane that this is going down. I agree with that overall, but we've still got to pull out of this at some point. So we'll be looking at all of that. But getting back to this being a continuation, Lawrence of Arabia, World War I, the drawing of the maps, the creating of the modern Middle East, Israel wants to implode that, bring in a greater Israel. They want us to fight and die in it. This is an acceleration of the original World War that we're just entering the third act of right now. Please support us at thealexjonesstore.com. A huge sale, 50% off Methylene Red. Other great products about to end. Also, we have the new RX site, 7076rx.health, where you can get the Mebendazole and the Ivermectin combo together. Nothing like it for anti-parasiticals and so much more. Just research what Mebendazole is also known to do. What is Mebendazole associated with in the studies? You'll be blown away what they don't want you to know. 7076rx.health and you're funding our operation of what we're doing. This is real pharmaceutical grade from a pharmacy. There's a lot of fake stuff out there that costs even more. This is a great deal and it funds our operation. Get yours now at 7076rx.health. And without further ado, that's why I was jumping in on Jan, because he's a little bit moving so fast here. That's why you got to do big picture for folks and then explain, because most people don't understand that the world wars never ended. They don't know that Korea never ended. It's officially still a war. They don't understand the real geopolitical stuff. We're not putting people down. Our audience is very sophisticated, but even the sophisticated ones would have trouble following you because it's at a PhD level. Please, Michael Yon, continue on. And now Rex Jones enters situation here as the co-host. Rex Jones.
Yeah, thanks, Dad. What you're talking about is Sykes-Picot, right? It's all these lines that Britain and the U.S. drew to, you know, decide who was going to be where and who was going to run what. And essentially what we did with Saudi Arabia is we gave a certain Bedouin tribe, you know, authority over the money and the country and the property and everything there. And as long as they agreed to abide by our system, everything was all good. Now we're seeing that kind of fall apart. We're seeing the enforcement of that old system fail from the West. Michael Yon, you talk about human asmotic or osmotic pressure a lot, right? That would be the mass migration caused by conflicts like this. I was seeing footage out of Spain this morning that was truly horrific. I guess there's a mass migrant wave coming from Morocco. Now, this may be unrelated. I don't think it's unrelated to what's happening in the Middle East as a whole. This is the type of thing at large for many countries that's going to result as a consequence of us being involved in this conflict. What do you think of that?
Right. I mean, some were coming through Ceuta, right? That's, I think, Ceuta right there.
Right.
I went down to Ceuta, actually, with Chuck Holton. We went to the Morocco side of it. Ceuta and Melilla, those are two Spanish cities in Morocco. So two Spanish EU cities are actually in Africa, right? So if you get into those cities, you're actually in the EU. And so we went up there to the, anyway, there's a wall around those cities, but there was huge amounts of aliens camped outside of Ceuta when we went there. Fascinating. You mentioned T.E. Lawrence, by the way, or Alex did.
Yes.
And it's interesting. I was looking at this last night, Seven Pillars of Wisdom, T.E. Lawrence. This is a really incredible book, by the way. I was just looking at it last night, and he just happened to mention it. But, you know, when you're looking at what's going on here, when we look at the Nazis that we were just talking about, the Nazis and the Zionists have been working together closely for a long time. They're that tight together, right? The Nazis the Nazis were trying to get Jews out of Germany, and the Zionists were trying to get Jews into Israel. And so the Zionists were killing a lot of Jews there, and a lot of Zionists actually are Jews, obviously. But so the Zionists and Jews who are not Zionists have been killing each other for more than a century. And this is well documented. I've got a book here somewhere. I had it out a couple of days ago. But it's about how the Zionists and the Nazis cooperated, right? Actually, this book is written by a Jewish author. But the fact is, a lot of the Zionists and the Nazis moved down to Argentina, where they're at now. In fact, I was doing these meetings every once a week for a while when we were down there, and they were in the old Nazi embassy. And this is a bunch of Jewish guys going to the meeting. There it is. Yeah, that's I've got that book. It's quite fascinating. But, you know, it's clear that the Zionists down in Argentina are working to gin up a war with Brazil, and that's in service to the larger war, the same war that we keep talking about in the Middle East. It's all the same war. And but again, the Zionists and the Nazis, they work hand in glove. The idea that they don't is completely false.
Yeah, I totally agree. I see this all as already a world war. There are people that deny it's even a regional war. They'll call it a conflict. They'll say, you know, it's, what has Trump said? It's a detour. You know, we got to take a detour. It's an excursion. And obviously, we're talking about not just our lack of munitions now. We've expended nearly all of our defense and a lot of our offensive capability, but also just the cost of American lives. You know, I've heard this argument from a few people. They say, well, you know, we lose more American soldiers in training exercises and accidents. We've only lost 18 men and women in this conflict so far. Michael Yon, you're a combat veteran, a military man. What do you say to that?
Well, this is just the beginning. I think we're going to see a draft, and I think they're going to work to kill off our people, and then draft people into our military that will be able to do genocide at home. That's clearly the direction that this is going. This is much more than, you know, a few little firefights or missiles going back and forth. This is a massive war, and like your father said, Alex, this is like a herpes outbreak. It's part of the same old war, but it's a, I call them inflection points, but I might start calling them herpes outbreaks. But I mean, but they're, you know, it can be quite significant though. And in this case, I'm guessing they'll end up being billions dead from famines and whatnot. When the famines really start, we can see we're heading that direction. If and when they start, the so-called migration, the weaponized migration the human osmotic pressure, that push and the pull of migration, will be intense, right? So places like Ceuta and Melilla, well, they'll just be overran, and Spain is being overrun now. Of course, you know, the Zionists hate Spain, and they're very open about hating, you know, Ireland and some of the other places, and they threaten them often with doing exactly what's doing. They invade them with so-called migrants to, you know, Camp of the Saints style, actually destroy all of Europe and the United States. Keep in mind, the Israelis are helping people invade the United States, and they openly do this. HIAS, Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, brings in huge numbers. They've got an office down in Darien Gap. They've got a building right next to China Camp. I mean, I've been there many times, like 100. I mean, it's all the time. And you know, I took congressmen down. I took Laura Loomer down there. Actually, Laura wow. Loomer was at the highest building, right? She was actually there. And actually, she talked. I have video of Laura talking with an Iranian. And it's on video. I published it before several times. Ann Vandersteel was there. I made video. She was talking with an Iranian that HIAS was helping that Iranian get to the United States. And that guy looked as, I mean, he looked like he's a serious guy. You should see the video. I can send it to you. But yeah. And so, you know, HIAS is helping Iranians invade the United States, not just Iranians. They're helping Chinese. They're helping Bangladeshis and people from about 150
countries. Because it's about the collapse of the West. It's about importing mm-hmm. whatever third world population, various populations. The goal is not to have something homogenous. It's to have as many different factions and groups as possible to cause chaos. I think this is very obvious, but never for them. Never for them. They don't have to take any migrants. They don't have to, you know, deal with the Palestinians and give them a state. They just say, hey, we're going to kill them all, genocide them all, and then you're going to take the refugees. I think this is quite shocking language as well. I hear this all the time from people over there. Somehow it's our responsibility, and I would say it is because we've helped kill the people over there. Michael, what do you think about just the expansion of the war? Saudi Arabia joins the U.S. in strikes on Iran-backed militias in Iraq. I'm sure you saw this story. What's your take on what's happening there?
That's in service to getting the big war going between Sunni and Shia.
Right.
Keep in mind, that can be global. That can unfold. You know, when the United States formed, a lot of, you know, the battles that we were having in the United States were, you know, imported, right? They were imported from Europe. That was part of a world war. I mean, our revolution was actually part of a larger world war. Again, we have two wars that we call world wars, but there's been many, many wars that were actually, I mean, the whole thing is, it's not these inflection points, let's say, they're components of a global war that's been going on for 500 years, a good 400 years, certainly since, you know, roughly around 1500. You know, the Treaty of Tordesillas that the Pope brokered between Spain and Portugal in 1494, that was, you might say, the beginning of maritime world war, right? Where it was really starting to get big, where the Pope divided the world into two between. This is the Portuguese side. That's why Brazil speaks Portuguese today. And then on the, you know, the Spanish side on the other side of that line. And then about 30 years later came up with the Treaty of Saragossa, which is another line, which, you know, put Japan on the Portuguese side. I'm in Japan now. Right. So that's why the Japanese ended up down in Nagasaki, and they brought in their craziness, and the Japanese chopped them up with swords and said, get out of here. So, but they let the they called them Nanban, Southern Barbarians. But then later, that's what the Japanese called the Portuguese. But then later, the Dutch came and did not push religion. They just did trade, and they were allowed to stay. But anyway, but that's part of the same war, is what I'm getting to. There's no difference in these the century after century. It's just there are inflection points. And the parties sometimes change. Like the Dutch East India Company is no longer a major player. The British East India Company is no longer a major player.
Right. Things evolve and mature. Things evolve and mature over time.
Right. So different crabs go into the hermit crab shells, right?
Yeah, 100%. Okay, so like, what's the U.S. military's next goal objective with the gradual expansion of the regional war? Like, what do you see the next, 2 to 4 weeks as being? Are we going to see more of a stalemate, more of the tit for tat? Because we're kind of ending like the second phase of the conflict. The first phase, the initial 39 days of the war, like the full kinetic engagement, the full wrath of America, whatever you want to say. Then we enter into this kind of MOU era where 6 weeks ago, Unc Trump comes out at the G7 and says, we're almost out of oil. We can't do this. We got to figure something out. And then a la the Treaty of Versailles, he ends up signing the MOU, right? And that didn't end up panning out. We've kind of returned to the tit for tat. Now we see that expanding with the strikes that Saudi Arabia is joining us in doing on Iran-backed militias in Iraq. And they say that's in response to Yemen's Houthis helping the Iraqi-backed militias. Michael Young, what happens next?
Just continue to explode. As you and Alex were talking, your father were talking about earlier, our eyes have been taken out over there with the radars, right? You mentioned the cost of some of those radars, and they're gone. They have to put AWACS and other assets up there to even get an idea of what's going on. But our bases have been pushed back. Like headquarters at Bahrain's been destroyed. Fifth Fleet. I've been in that headquarters, actually. The Secretary of Defense picked me up in Afghanistan and brought me over there, introduced me to the admiral in charge. Admiral Gorton, he was his name. Secretary of Defense was Robert Gates at the time. I'd fly around with him sometimes and see things. But that's gone now. I mean, that headquarters is, our bases have been pushed back. Iran is actually doing swimmingly in this, right? They could emerge from this as a world power, actually. Right. And they know that.
Well, that's the key, because all they have to do is control the strait. We have to implement regime change. This is a regime change war. And denying that on our side is incredibly dishonest. And that's the main thing that grinds my gears about the conflict. They literally told us on day one what this was about. Before day one, this has been Netanyahu's plan for 35 plus years. And the denial of, now it's just, we're going to control the strait, we're going to charge a fee so they don't charge a fee, it's better when we do it. We're ultimately not going to be able to implement any of that unless we take the country over. My thing is, how does that happen? Because everything I hear from the various geopolitical experts, including yourself, is that the military is depleted, the munitions are depleted, the bases are destroyed, the radar is out of commission. What does America do if Trump does decide, which it looks like he has, in my opinion, to stay involved in the conflict? Because we can say, like, it's all falling apart, but, like, can it all fall apart forever? Can this happen for a whole nother year? What's the timeline there?
Trump doesn't run this war. I mean, the fight has been started and it's game on. It's out of his control. It's just out of his control. He can talk a big game. I think from here it's going to spread. I think eventually Malacca is highly threatened, and Strait of Malacca. I think even Danish Strait up there, and that's very important. The Turkish straits, of course, Bosphorus, Dardanelles, Suez itself, Gibraltar, Panama, of course. I mean, all of these places are this is not about some local thing in the Middle East, which is huge. This is about global depopulation. This is much, much bigger than this. Can't be understood without looking at the macro view. Actually, on the macro view, things get more simple. They don't get more complex. Things are far more complex on the tactical level and the strategic level. But when you go to grand strategy, which is more what I talk about, it gets actually weirdly simpler. For instance, that's how I was able to predict Strait of Hormuz would be closed in last July. I published it on my Substack, right? And many times I mentioned this, and even predicted the date of the attack very accurately, on my Substack. And so what I'm getting to is this is global. It's been going on for a long time. There is a clear push to keep in mind that the war has so many aspects to it. For instance, knocking the farmers off of their farms, fishermen out of their boats, screw worms coming back, Nord Stream blown up, groaning and closed. Groningen gas field, the biggest gas field in Europe, right? And so many think there's so many components to this. Fertilizer plants burning down
No, that's the key. That's the key, because why would the EU be spoiling for a war when they've destroyed their own domestic energy and manufacturing capability? It makes absolutely no sense, right? You're dooming yourself, literally. And you could say we're doing the same thing to a lesser extent. You're talking about Europe. What's this gas field that's closed?
Groningen. It's in Netherlands. Misako and I have been up there, it's closed. I mean, when I was saying that, I think I may have been on Jordan Peterson's show or somewhere. I said that, you know, I think that they may close the Groningen gas field. Many people got upset. They're like, they're never going to close Groningen gas field. It's the biggest gas field in Europe. And I'm like, hello. You know, that's why Nord Stream got blown up, which we also successfully predicted, not just predicted. We were over. I had bought an iPad just to track Nord Stream flows. And it was just a dedicated iPad because it was a website that showed how many cubic meters per second were going through. So Nord Stream is Groningen is closed. That's, you know, and when you add all these things that they're putting these ridiculous windmills all over the place, right? Which is all part of the fight, taking farmers off of their farms. And in Netherlands, they use the excuse of nitrogen. They're saying there's too much nitrogen, but you just cross the border over to Germany because, you know, Netherlands and Germany share a border, and you go into Germany and they don't talk about nitrogen anymore. They talk about carbon dioxide. You should see those windmills over in Netherlands. They're unbelievable, especially the ones that are out in the North Sea. Now, keep in mind, speaking of the North Sea, eventually there'll be a big fight over the North Sea. I'm not sure how that'll play out, but the North Sea, when it comes to routes and resources, the North Sea is you know, it's a king daddy, right? There's been a lot of war over the North Seas in the past, and it's almost a sure bet that there'll eventually be wars up there again. And again, that would include Russia, obviously, and others.
But 100%.
This war is planned. But why would they do this, you mentioned? This is important. The leadership, so-called leadership that's been installed, they're just a bunch of robots, including here in Japan, including across the United States. In many of the countries that I go to, the people that have been installed, they seem to think that they're on a mission from God and they're going to have a seat on Noah's Ark, right? They're going to have a seat. But here's a newsflash. A lot of these people took the death jab, right? And a lot of these people, if you took the death jab, there is no seat reserved for you on the ARC. I don't care if you work for BlackRock, which many of those executives actually took the jab. If you took the jab, you're not one of the chosen people, period, right? And so and that includes royal families and many others. But they seem to think that they're part of the ARC, or they're going to be on the ARC, but they're not going to be. But a lot of these Europeans that are just turning out the lights on Europe, and Americans turning out the lights on America, and other countries like Australia doing it, and here in Japan, the leadership.
Powerful stuff. Michael Yon, thank you so much. Really appreciate that. We'll be right back. Thank you, Michael.
My fellow patriots, the first thing the globalists and the leftists do when they want to silence you is go after your merchant accounts, go after your business payment systems. It's that simple. They try to cut off your ability to even receive money or make payments. If you are a conservative business owner, Google is watching you, Meta, Facebook is watching you, Amazon, all of the major big tech is watching you. If you think for one second that they are not orchestrating and coordinating their efforts behind the scenes to take you offline and out of business and render you harmless to the system and the machine, you are wrong. The question is not if, it's when Stripe, Shopify, PayPal, Square, they're all part of the same big tech machine. Because once there's only one central system, they can bring in the universal credit score. The head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, was very clear. Once they have the system in place and they're close, they are going to shut down everybody that isn't part of their system, even people that aren't political. This is about total control. They've just got to get to the patriots that are opposing them to get to you. And FirstUnitedPayments.com stands directly in the tyrant's way. My fellow Americans, this is your call to action. Call or email First United Payments now and ask them how you can protect your business against the globalist predatory attacks and shutdowns today. And talk to a real human here in the good old U.S. of A. by calling toll-free 877-899-1313. You've got to be able to have your own business. You've got to be able to operate without these globalist sharks, this mafia shutting you down. And First United Payments is the tip of the spear. Proven warriors, ladies and gentlemen, in this fight. Online merchants, this is the place for you. Now visit FirstUnitedPayments.com right now.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.